have a break about 5 and 10 minutes at 4:30. But anyway, you know, let's start.
So please let me repeat showing this nice figure of fixed flow production. And I already explained to you roughly the magnitude of cross sections for gluon fusion. These are called, you know, vector boson fusion, because this process is essentially coming from W fusion or Z boson fusion. Okay, and these are called weak boson. It's rather difficult. It's Higgs-Strahlen or something. It's a very strange name. But in any case. And then these are TT by Higgs production, which is here. Okay. Now, I get into detail. Okay. Now it becomes rather difficult. The last part of my lecture will be rather hard. Okay. By using the information about the photon luminosity and the cross section. The cross section is rather difficult, but after the combination of these figures were made, so if you just believe in the figures which were made by using simple calculation, you can roughly guess the number of events. Okay? But then you start checking which decay mode of the Higgs boson we can detect at the LHC. Okay? So first we think about the Higgs boson, yeah? Any Higgs boson that we do not care about anything else, then it is called X. X means anything else. So this is an inclusive Higgs boson production. Now starting from this, you can think of any decays, BB bar, tau pair, mu pair, WW star, ZZ star, gamma, gamma, TT bar if it is heavy enough. Okay? And then all these modes should have some signals which has a rather high PT leptons, isolated leptons, or high PT jets, or high PT photon, isolated photon, or very high high PT jets. Okay. Now, actually, all of them have them. For instance, even BB bar, there are lots of jets. I mean, those that, you know, typically Higgs boson mass is 120 GeV or heavier. So each B jet has typically 60 GeV in the rest frame of the H. And even at the PP collider rest frame, at least one of the B jets should have greater than 60 GeV in PP. And not really, not always, but most of the time. So we do have all those triggers passed. But then, afterwards, we check what kind of noise we have. S is signal, and the noise is the background. And we should check S of N. And in many sense, only when we have large, either S of N is of order 1, okay, there is a chance that we can detect it. If S of N is significantly smaller than 1, in that case, we should find a way to make a signal deviation of the significance of signal to be greater than the statistical fluctuation, and I will show you how to do it in the next slide. Okay. So in any case, if signal over noise is of the order of 1, then we can detect it. If not, we should find a way such that the signal is much bigger than the statistical fluctuation. Now, we study those things, and BB, it's okay, but unfortunately, standard model can easily make dB at this mass range. Actually, dB budget, dB bar anything, there are lots of events much bigger than this. And in addition, ordinary jet, BJ anything, or JJ anything, also contributes to this sample because it is not possible to reject non-B-jet from B-jet with 100% confidence level. And actually, in reality, it is much worse. Okay? At the LSC, at the Tevatron, it is slightly better because they can identify B-jet from the very good vertex detector. Okay? So B-Corc first becomes B-hadron, but the B-hadron has a very long lifetime. So it travels inside of the detector. I forgot how many millimeters. It's much smaller than millimeters, a few hundred micrometers, I think. But in any case, that's big enough for sophisticated silicon vertex detector. Okay? So you can find the signal of the trajectory away from the vertex point beam. Okay? So you travel and then decay. And this shift you can identify at the Tevatron experiment. And exactly the same can be done was done at the left experiment in E-platinum collisions. But at LSC, especially with high luminosity, it will be very difficult. And I usually think that the BJet identification is the easiest in LHC by looking for B-meson semi-electronic decay into muons. The decay into electron is almost useless because when B-meson decays into electron, those electrons are inside of a hadronic jet. And once electron is inside of the hadronic jet usually contains lots of pi zero. Okay? Now pi zero decays into two photons. And photons and electrons are not so easy to distinguish. Yeah? Of course, electrons make trajectories, but photons also can hit materials and make E plus E minus. So it's very difficult. But for muon doesn't radiate off. So muon can be seen even inside of the jet. So usually semi-electronic decay or B-meson to muon is the best tag for the B-Corc jet. So then it means that you look for the muon inside of the jet, and if there's a muon, you identify it as a B-jet. And in principle, you can look for the vertex after that, and then you can confirm it. But those processes are never 100% sure. You know, there is a possibility that the other jet also gives similar results. So actually, if there are lots of JJ, two jet events at 120 GeV, say, yeah, there are, okay, upcork and most copious one is gluon, okay? So then even with a very good rejection, say, even if you can reject it by, one in 100, yeah? Still, there are many events. So those are the problems you need to consider. That's the difficulty of the LHC physics. Now, in case of tau plus tau minus, in principle, you can look for both tau leptons decaying into charged leptons. And then you may try to see if you can identify it. But then again, there are lots of tau plus tau minus to start with, W plus W minus, and then you find that it's just impossible. And likewise, I mean, most things are almost impossible. I think mu plus mu minus is possible, but I do not know whether there is a good studies on this. I'm pretty sure that mu plus mu minus can be observed, but only when Higgs boson is light, say below 130 GeV, then the branching fraction is not too small. I think 1 in 10,000 of Higgs boson decays into mu plus mu minus. So if you have 1 million Higgs boson, then we will have lots of mu plus mu minus. But that's a very high luminosity operation. Okay? Now, for WW star, A plus A minus is possible, but again, it's swamped by the standard model background. ZZ star, if it is light, its branching fraction is too small and it's impossible. And actually, if you try this away, for the light Higgs boson below 130 GeV, which can accommodate supersymmetric granulification, only two photons turned out to be possible. I'll discuss this later. Okay. Now, in case of this Higgs-Strahlen kind of processes, where Higgs boson is produced in association with W and Z, this is a major mode for Tevatron as such, but it turned out that none of them seems to be used. And I do not know the two detailed studies, but at this moment there is no good study which tells that these modes will be useful. Now, on the other hand, HJJ mode, this is essentially vector boson fusion production of Higgs boson, says that all these three modes may be possible to be observed. That is very encouraging. So these are the three modes where BB bar is still difficult because these are all hadronic jets. There are just too many hadronic jets. Okay. Now, in case of tau plus psi minus, if both of tau leptons decays into leptons, when one of them decays into charged leptons, it is possible to identify. And also, when WW star, they decay into L plus A minus, that's missing TT, it is possible to identify. Two photon is also possible. Okay? Now, those I will explain it later, why it is possible. Here, I just made a... it's not so... It's just too brief. It's just a cross section for single production. It can come from goo-goo to Higgs or heavy core pair to Higgs. And actually, you can roughly estimate this amplitude as since you have a gluon coupling twice and there is a loop factor, so it is essentially alpha strong over pi. And there is a coupling, Yukawa coupling, which is MT over V. Okay? So this is essentially the magnitude of this loop amplitude. Yeah. My order estimate is very simple. Okay? And CC bar BB bar to H is essentially, the amplitude is essentially M coq over V. Okay? And then actually if you compare B coq MV over V and this quantity, you find that it's approximately the same because alpha S over pi is rather small. Okay, alpha S is maybe smaller than 1 over 10, right? So maybe 0.05 or so. Okay. Now, then it is extremely useful to use this table of parton-parton luminosity. If you remember, glue-glue luminosity is extremely large. Yeah? And that is the reason why glue-glue to Higgs, this one loop amplitude by far dominates over the other. So this is completely negligible. Now, in case of Higgs-Strahlen, this is just a diagram, and the cross-section is essentially GW square. It's very simple. It's just two electric couplings. And for vector boson fusion processes, this is rather complicated because it is 2 to 3 processes. But the important thing is because of vector boson exchange here, we have a typical transverse momentum of these two jets which is of the order of weak boson mass. And at the same time, when both up quark and down quark are valence quarks of the proton, there is a big contribution to the Higgs boson contribution, because very hard proton emits soft weak boson. Okay, and the amplitude is bigger if the the ratio of the weak boson momentum versus the initial quark momentum is small. And because of this, relatively hard, very hard quark pair contribute to the weak boson fusion. And because it starts with very high hard patterns, these final D and U tend to have very, very, very big energy. Okay. And this one goes into right hand direction, and then this one goes to left hand direction. They have a very, very different rapidity. Okay. One is very small angle, the other is very large angle. Okay. So the rapidity difference between these two quark jets is very large. And in addition, the jet energy is very large. And because of this, they can trigger on these two jets. And in addition, I will show you next that the hadronic activities between this jet and this jet in a very wide angle, okay? The detector covers all four angles. And I told you that one of jet goes into very forward direction, the other jet goes to very backward direction. The major part of the detector is in between these two half jets. And QCD predicts that there will be no hadronic jets in between. So the detector should be completely open, yeah, without any hadronic activity. And then if there is, say, two photons, you have only two photons. If there are only leptons, only leptonic lepton detectors, signal. L-pi is also possible because the pion is isolated from anything else, because QCD predicts that there is nothing else. If there is one single pion, you say that, oh, maybe it's coming from tau lepton. That's something which is possible to do in this channel. Yeah, that explanation is several transparencies down. I'm sorry. Please let me just follow this. I told you that when Higgs boson is very light, so actually I did not copy the right transparency because we are most interested in Higgs boson mass range between 115 GeV, the present limit, and 130 GeV is around here. Okay, that's the limit from the supersymmetric unification. Or actually, any unification, if we have heavier Higgs boson, then you always need to have a large coupling to give Higgs boson a mass. Once you have large coupling to the Higgs boson, then we can tell immediately that this coupling blows up before the ground unification scale. The ground unification scale should be around 10 to 16 GeV. If one of the coupling, which couples to the other particles, okay, blows up before this granification scale, then actually, when the coupling becomes infinite, new strong interactions should start, and our calculation turns out to be wrong. So if we want to preserve our understanding of why strong interaction is stronger than SU2 coupling, than U1 coupling, then actually we need to have relatively light Higgs boson. In the supersymmetric model, this statement can be made quantitative. and then we can tell rather confidently that the Higgs boson, lightest Higgs boson mass should be somewhere between below 130 GeV. By doing some exercises, it is possible to go up to 140 GeV or so, but not much. You always need to have strong interactions which violate this unitarity condition for the perturbative unification condition. So around here, it's very complicated, but at very below, very light limit, BB bar dominates, and tau tau and BB bar ratio is very simple because it's essentially the mass term, okay? Mass difference term. And important thing is WW star. You know, this is the W pair threshold. So at 160 GeV, okay, almost all the Higgs boson decays into W pair, 100%. But even around here, the WW star branching fraction is nearly 10%, even bigger than tau plus tau minus. That's why WW star is very important. And significant fraction of WW star goes to leptons, two leptons and neutrinos. Okay? So it is important. Now, ZZ star is also important here. It becomes small around 160 GeV because WW becomes on shell. Okay? But otherwise, around here it can go up to, 7% or so. But at around 130, it is still rather small. And the problem about ZZ is Z boson has relatively small decay branching fraction to charged electron pair. So electron pair 3%, muon pair 3%. So even we add both electron pair and muon pair, we have only 6%. And 6% times 6% is rather small. Please calculate. And so this branching fraction should be multiplied by 6% and 6%. So it goes rather very low. It goes around here, I think. And then this is the same as two photon. Okay? It's rather small, 10 to the minus 3 to the 2. Yeah? But still, because two photon can be observed directly, it can be useful. Okay? So these informations are very important. And then, you know, this is the prediction of the standard model Higgs boson. Many of us believe that standard model Higgs boson is not the final story. Most likely it isn't. Okay? So we will have additional Higgs bosons. We will have more exotic families and exotic couplings. Then all these tables will be different. Okay? So unfortunately, whenever we change the model, we should recalculate the cross-section, production cross-section, and the decay branching ratio table. And then we start rethinking again. You cannot simply copy the standard model studies to new physics studies, because both the production cross-section and the decay branching fraction will be model dependent. Okay. So each time you change the model, you calculate the production cross-section and the decay branching fraction again. And then by using, those discussions about the background, they are the same. But the signal cross-section will be very different. Okay? In some cases, new physics scenario gives even favorable signals than the standard model. I try to explain very roughly the branching fraction. Oh, sorry. So 115 to 130, this is a narrow window. BB bar 80%, tau plus tau minus 2%, 8%, and mu plus mu minus is 0.02, gamma at the maximum 0.2, usually 0.1, WW star is 10%, 80%, 100%, 70%, and how can I read it? I cannot read it, sorry. And they asymptotically go to 2 over 3. Okay? This is star around 10% here, the maximum, and then it goes down, and then approaches, say, 25% here, this should be 75%, because it is now, 55. Sorry, it's rather strange. 55, 25, and 20, does it go up to 100? I'm sorry, something is wrong. But in any case, top cork is only around here. Okay? And the interesting thing about this is the top cork contribution is at the maximum only 20%, and it cannot survive at high energies. And at very high high mass, 1,000 GeV, essentially the Higgs boson is strongly coupled to the Goldstone boson. Okay, and because of this strong coupling, actually it gets all into W pairs. All those Ws are actually Goldstone bosons or in longitudinal polarized Ws. Yes. And because of this, we know that it's 2 versus 1. Because as I told you, Goldstone bosons of the standard model is a triplet. Okay? So it's just exactly the same as W plus, W minus, and as W0. Okay? So that's 2 versus 1. And now, important thing is signals. You know, in order for us to identify the signal, we need to have high PT electron muon, high PT jet, high PT, high missing PT. Oh, I forgot gamma here. Let me write it down. By high PT, typically it is 30 GeV, and for electron muon photon, the pseudo rapidity is smaller than 2.5. For jets, the pseudo rapidity should be smaller than 5. Now for the noise. One way to beat the noise is if the signal has some peak. Okay, then the noise can be reduced significantly because you look for the noise only in the small range of the peak, right? That's the standard technique. Now, Higgs boson is a resonance, so it will be best if we can identify MH, okay? Higgs boson mass, invariant mass, okay? So we try to do it, okay? Now, in case of BB bar, of course we can make a MH peak kinematically, but then the number of background is so large such that the signal never exceeds statistical fluctuation. Statistical fluctuation is the square root of S signal, number of signals and number of noise. Okay? That's the rule. A statistical error of any quantity is the square root of the number of events. Okay? That is, I forgot, a large number low or something. Fluctuation of independent events. So this is not useful. For two photon, actually it is there are lots of background from two photon from QCD like QQ bar to two photon, and photon plus jet where single jet can be misidentified as photon because sometimes jet has very energetic pi zero. And all the other hadrons are stopped. Okay? Sometimes other hadrons get into the crack of the detector. Now pi zero is not so easy to distinguish from single photon, okay? Because high energy pi zero is collinear two photons. Collinear two photon is very difficult to distinguish from single photon, okay? So you make mistake. So all those should be considered, but the detectors are made such that if the resolution of the invariant mass resolution is good enough, a few GeV, then in this region, square root of S background fluctuation can be made much small enough such that the signal of a fluctuation can be bigger than 5. And this 5 is the 5 sigma significance is the kind of rule of thumb for the discovery. Well, mu plus mu minus and ZZ star to mu plus 4 leptons are very small branching fractions that can still be observed because of very small background. Okay. If there is absolutely no background, you know, even if you have just 10 events, you are convinced that you find something, right? So 10 events is sufficient if there is no background. Okay, so then you know, 100 inverse pentagon or something is needed for this. And actually, one very important thing which happened to be useful for the LHC is that the tau plus tau minus decay of Higgs boson, we can also reconstruct the Higgs boson mass. Okay. People in old days thought that because tau plus tau minus decays gives at least 2 neutrinos, they thought that it is not possible to completely determine the kinematics. But it is not true. Okay? If you think, the only condition we need is that tau plus tau minus transverse momentum sums up to some finite transverse momentum. I wrote here is transverse momentum plane. Okay? And as I told you that we can measure the transverse momentum of even missing PT. Okay? And because of this, actually we can calculate the Higgs boson transverse momentum. Okay? Now, some of the tau transverse momentum and tau minus and tau plus transverse momentum is the Higgs boson transverse momentum. If this Higgs boson transverse momentum is not zero, then you can tell that, you know, you have one decay product of tau, which is moves along the tau direction. This is true because tau energy is much larger than tau mass. So all the decay products of tau moves along the tau momentum direction. Okay? So if you know the momentum direction of tau decay products, like electron, then we know that tau is along this direction. If you also find another pi meson, which goes along this, then we know that the tau momentum is along this direction. Only thing we do not know is the momentum fraction of this electron inside of tau, and another momentum fraction of this pion inside of another tau. We have two unknowns. But if we know the vector sum of this, two vector, actually we have two equations. Transverse momentum is a two-dimensional plane. So we have momentum conservation in P, X direction and Y direction. And we can write down two equations, and these momentum fractions, X1 and X2, can be solved. And once it is solved, then this momentum over X1 is this tau momentum. This momentum over X2 is this tau momentum. And now we can reconstruct the tau core momentum. Okay, both tau core momentum, and we can calculate the invariant mass of tau pair. That is the Higgs boson mass. And this is extremely simple, and I didn't know when I knew this. I feel like I knew it from the starting. But when I asked my collaborator, David Rainwater of the United States, I asked him for when this was known, and he told me that when he was a student, I wrote this figure on the blackboard and explained this to him. And this is the first time he knew this. And then we wrote a paper together. So it is possible that I found this, but it's a very, very, very simple thing. And in addition, we have rapidity gap for the QQ. This I draw another figure later. Okay. And if you think about the extended Higgs vector, it is often considered interesting that you know, the difference between the bottom Koch mass and top Koch mass may result from the difference in the two vacuum expectation values. Okay? Usually, in the standard model, bottom Koch is much lighter than the top Koch because the Yukawa coupling to the bottom Koch is much smaller than the Yukawa coupling to the top Koch. But if you have two vacuum expectation values, you can arrange such that both top Koch Yukawa coupling and bottom Koch Yukawa coupling are the same, yeah? But the two vacuum expectation values are very different, a factor of 50. Okay? That is possible. Okay? That is actually the prediction of a simple SO10 model. Okay? Now, if it is the case, then actually bottom Koch coupling to the Higgs boson is enhanced, okay, by a factor of 50. And if the coupling is enhanced by a factor of 50, then the cross-section can be sometimes, you know, half factor 50 squared enhanced. That's great, right? So in some cases, this becomes, BB bar Higgs boson becomes very important. So you should never forget. So I have slightly more detailed comments now. So for Higgs boson decay into two photons, we have branching fraction of the order of 10 to the minus 3. Okay? It's small, but sigma times branching fraction is about 70 femtobound. Okay? So the signal for 10 inverse femtobound is about 700 events. This is very important. If this number is very small, then it is useless. Okay? Now, we calculate the background, estimate the background this way. First of all, QQ bar to gamma gamma, so this is a, I mean, irreducible background from the real two photon. It's about 200 femtobound in RGB. Okay. Now, the sigma over the gamma J, photon jet, is 2 times 10 to the 5 femtobound over GeV. It's a big number. And JJ, GluGlu, around 120 GeV, is 6 times 10 to the 8 femtobound. So you can tell that the single photon plus J is a huge number. Okay? But then you compare with this number, you find that if you can reject a single photon and jet by probability of 10 to the minus 3, 1 in 1,000, then actually this background is becomes comparable to the QC, I mean the reducible background. Okay, and this also becomes almost the same as this one. Okay, 10 to the minus 3 is necessary. Okay, now assume that we achieve this 10 to the minus 3 rejection of jet over photon. So, you know, about 1 in 1,000 jet, we misidentify as single photon. Okay? So in this case, we have this is an irreducible background, and assume that the invariant mass resolution is about 3 GeV, a few GeV. Okay, this is what CMS and ATLAS made made lots of effort to make their electromagnetic collimator very accurate. It is to achieve this kind of very small mass resolution. Okay. And because the background is proportional to the resolution, you know, if you can make your peak narrower, then your background is smaller, right? So it is very important to have the very good accuracy of your energy measurement of the photon, okay? Energy and angle. Okay? Now, factor of 3, I just assume that 10 to the minus 3, and it's essentially 1, 1, 1. So then you find about 18,000 events, okay, from the background, from this kind of rough estimate. Now, let's check if the signal stands up. Signal is here. The fluctuation of the background is B plus S. It is roughly around here. And you make a query, you find the fluctuation is 137, and you find that it's 5 sigma. This is something which you can even do yourself. Okay. Of course, those numbers you need to pick up from the experimental paper. Yeah. And also this number, resolution. But once you do it, roughly you can just tell by this kind of simple calculation, you can tell that it is possible for those detectors to discover the Higgs boson in this channel. Now, for mu plus mu minus, the branching fraction is 10 to the minus 5, and cross-section is 0.7 femtobarn. So with 10 meters femtobarn, it is possible that we have 7 events. So let's look for it, okay? Of course, maybe this is too small to really tell anything, but if the mass is the same as 2 photons, almost nobody doubts that you found the Higgs boson decay into mu plus mu minus. That's extremely important because it tells us the Yukawa coupling to leptons. Okay. Now, in addition, if we measure tau plus tau minus branching fraction, then we can tell that whether the same vacuum expectation value gives coupling mass to the muon and tau lepton. Then the coupling should be the same, right? Those information you can obtain. So, I mean, even with 7 events, we can learn a lot. So, I think, I hope that this estimate is not really wrong. So, this is a nice figure by experimentalists. Okay? But now, from now on, if you see these figures, you know what they are doing, right? That's the only reason why I explained everything. You understand it, right? So, this is the signal, this is the background, yeah? And you see that this is cut off, you know, this is not, this is 4,000, 3,000, 2,000, 1,000, zero is around here, so the background is very large, yeah? But still, the fluctuation is square root of this, okay? And if this is narrow enough, you can, the signal stands up. That's what I said. Another mode is 4 muon. This is very important because we can not only tell J, but also CP of the Higgs boson from this final state analysis. But only when, I mean, if the Higgs boson is heavier than 2mz, then these are the major modes, so we can study many things very easy. And the important thing is cross-section is very large. 10 femtobarn for 180 to 400 GeV. 10 femtobarn, okay? So it's very large. So in a sense, if even with 1 femtobarn inverse of luminosity, 1/10 of the 1 year, okay? So 1 month, we have 10 such events. And if you have 10 lepton events, and all of them have the same mass, okay? You think that you discover, okay? So, of course, 10 events may be too small to say discovery, but in any case, even with 1 inverse femtobarn, we can rather clearly see something, okay? So, that's why I said that if Higgs boson is in this region, we will hear about the Higgs boson at a very early stage. And also, if there is no Higgs boson in this range, they can give the rejection of this range rather easily at early stage. Okay. It's 4 now. Experimentalist, nice looking here. Looking here. So Higgs boson decay into ZZ, mu plus mu minus, mu plus mu minus, and it stands up. You know, actually, rather interesting to know that even at 150, we have rather clear signal. And the important thing is at the very edge of the Higgs-like, SUSY-like Higgs, yeah, the heaviest edge, there is still significant event. Okay. So this star is also rather important. If the Higgs boson is at the very edge of the SUSY allowed mass range. Now, in this transparency, I try to explain to you the rapidity gap in the vector boson fusion processes. Okay? So, we have quark emits q prime, and produce Higgs boson. The diagram I didn't write. And Higgs boson decays into two photon, tau pair, W pair. Tau pair and W pair should decay into charged lepton, and in case of tau pair, it can also decay into pion. Okay? And in this case, in these two cases, I told you that we have two photon invariant mass peak. And in this case, I explained to you later that actually there is a rather good signal over, even though we cannot make an invariant mass measurement because of missing PP here, but we can have a rather strong peak in the transverse mass peak. So transverse mass is a kind of invariant mass minus longitudinal momentum of the missing quantity. Okay. So the point is missing momentum along the longitudinal direction is not so large. Okay. So so we can still find some peak. Now these two quarks give very forward to jet, very energetic, and PT of the order of weak boson mass. And then there is a rapidity gap. And rapidity gap I try to explain in this very simple picture. Okay. You think that the proton and proton are colliding from each, from left and from right. And then you exchange weak bosons, produce Higgs boson there. But then please think about the scattered quark. Okay? This quark is scattered by this weak boson and produce forward jets. And think of this system, this scattered quark and the rest. This is the system where originally it was the proton. Okay? So the whole point is this is color triplet quantity, the rest is color anti-triplet. Okay? They are moving in all into the right direction. Now, under this condition, you try to radiate off gluons from this configuration. You attach gluons everywhere and calculate. And then you find that if gluon is emitted in this direction, okay, a larger angle than this quark, then actually these gluons tend to see both quark and the remnant, 3 and 3 bar together. And then the sum is color singlet, so the amplitude is diminished. So the amplitude for gluon emission in this direction, larger angle, is very small. And actually, you calculate it explicitly in perturbation theory, and you find that it is very, very small to radiate off from in this direction. And if you do non-perturbative thing, then actually you think that this quark and the anti-quark will be attracted to each other, and lots of hadrons will be produced here. But this is outside. There is no reason to produce pions, right? Well, non-perturbatively, it doesn't radiate either. So it is likely that in this direction, there will be no gluons, no hadrons. The same is here. You know, this quark goes into very left-hand direction, and in this region, there will be no hadronic activities. So it means that, you know, this region is covered by the very good detector, solid detector. And at the one edge and another edge, they obtain very energetic jet activities, but in between, very weak hadronic activities. Those information will be used, okay, in this study. Now, remember about high luminosity LHC. I told you that even if you tag this event, more than 10, 20 events will be recorded, okay, on the same tape. There is no way to distinguish them. Now, for all those 10, 20 events, those have lots of small soft particles here. Okay? So this rapidity gap can be filled by soft particles, and if we are unlucky, it can have relatively high PT, one thing, and then all things go away. So actually, this kind of analysis will be useful only up to 10 to the 33 integrated luminosity. At the 10 to the 34 level, it is likely that it is rather difficult to make use of it. Okay. You cannot give up. You can still find a way in, because underground, background, those underlying events, very unlikely to have very high PT, 5 GeV or so of that. Okay. So you may try to set some limits, and then perhaps this can still be okay. But it is far more difficult than the low luminosity case. So there are cases like this. Okay. Now, this is extremely difficult. Okay, but Atlas people believe that they can do it, so I just list it. Okay, so this is T diva Higgs boson. Okay, and T diva decays into lepton W pair BB bar. One of W decays into lepton. Okay, and Higgs boson decays into BB bar. Otherwise, the rate becomes too small. Okay. So the whole point is, in this case, we can look for the major decay mode of the Higgs boson, okay? And by using W decay into lepton neutrino as a trigger. So this is a very difficult experiment, but one of the very first things the LHC experimentalists will do is a thorough study of TTBA event. Okay, because TTBA is the most important signals which allow them to determine the calibrate their detector, because TTBA process has two known invariant masses. One is W invariant mass, another is Topkok invariant mass. Of course, the Topkok invariant mass is not very accurately known, but the LHC detector at the beginning, almost nothing is known. Okay? So even this with 2 GeV or 3 GeV uncertainty in the Topkok mass, they can use this information to calibrate their jet detector response. Okay? And especially for leptons, it is lepton and missing PT is very important, because we know that TT bar gives W, yeah? And these W decays into lepton neutrino, and we know the spectrum. Lepton neutrino should give invariant mass of the W, even though invariant mass cannot be made, but we can also measure transverse mass for lepton neutrino system. And the spectrum is well predicted. So we can use those information. So the whole point is, they would do this TTBA study very carefully, and then many of those TTBA events will have extra jets. Okay? One jet, two jet, three jet. Now, you look for two TTBA plus two jet events, okay? And then study if these two jets have a peak in the invariant mass. This kind of study they should do. And then once they find some signal, they try to sharpen the signal by trying to select B like this. Okay? Because they have a B, four Bs, B tagging is very important. But the B tagging technology will be studied in TTY events because all TTY events should have two Bs. Okay? By knowing that you already, there should be two Bs, they can calibrate their detector. Okay? Their performance of the detector, the probability that B-jet can be identified as B-jet, they can determine. So this is very important. And once they are successful in this kind of analysis, it is not a dream that this can be measured. And I already told you here that it's most important to understand the standard model background with valid normalization and also the distributions. Okay? Because you know, all the background we have, you know, say in this case, TTBAR plus 2J background is also there, but also W plus 6J. Okay? W plus 6J can be a standard model background. Then there should be some, you know, distributions, and you know, in order to distinguish with this, the standard model background should have the correct property of the invariant mass combination in many ways. Okay? Some combination can become popcock and mass, and you know, there are lots of constraints. But after selecting those things, the standard model contribution still have some correlation, and those correlations should be known.
This is assuming the top key is standard.
Oh yes.
It's not
yes.
Standard a lot of time.
I think the whole strategy should be changed. I explain. I mean, of course, W and Z and photon, those can be used to calibrate standard model Monte Carlo program. And then, in principle, those adjustments can be used to improve TTBAR program. But I think for B tagging it would be very difficult. I think we need to assume that the top code is standard decaying, I guess. Here is a very nice picture for first, this one is WW star, and this is the transverse mass, and there is a very clear peak around 160 GeV. Okay, well, this is not really SUSY-like, but this is much better, top there. I think it is 120, our favorite value, and you see the peak. It's not very clear peak, but still, some enhancement in the invariant mass of around here can be seen. This is a Z boson. I wrote this transparency after the lunch break because I obtained a question from the audience at the lunch time about the tau polarization. This is a kind of very old work on myself. I compare Higgs boson decay to tau plus phi minus and Z boson decay. So the difference is Higgs boson is spinless particle, so both decaying particles should have the same helicity, okay? If this is left-handed, this is left-handed. This is right-handed, if another one is right-handed. Otherwise, it cannot decay from the spinless particle, okay? And in terms of the particle-antiparticle notation, tau L, tau minus L is a left-handed tau, and tau L, tau plus left-handed is a antiparticle of right-handed power lepton. And this notation is very important because decay distribution, decay pattern, essentially follows CP invariant. The particle decay is identical to antiparticle decay under CP invariant. Okay. In order to see this, this notation is necessary. So Higgs boson decay seems to a pair of different particles, you know, tau L and tau R bar. Okay. Now, Z boson decays, it decays into the particle antiparticle pair, tau L and the antiparticle of tau L, tau R and the antiparticle of tau R. This is a very big difference. For theory students, you know that the gauge coupling is chirality conserving. Okay? Chirality doesn't change by gauge interaction. But the Higgs interaction connects different particles, okay, different chiralities. Okay? This is just a reflection of this rule. Okay? But just a spin accounting, you can easily see this. Now, there is a very clear difference between left-handed tau and right-handed tau. Okay? This is a simple note about left-handed tau, and this is a simple note about right-handed tau. So left-handed tau is moving in this direction, and in the CM frame, tau lepton has this polarization, to left-handed. Now, when it decays into neutrino and pi minus, since pi minus doesn't have a spin, and we know that neutrino is left-handed, this configuration is preferred, you know. The initial state spin and the final state spin matches. Okay? This is the biggest contribution. It means that since tau lepton is moving in this direction, right-hand direction, pi minus is soft. Okay? If tau is right-handed polarized, actually it is opposite. Because neutrino is left-handed, it is better for neutrino to move backwards. It means that pion should be emitted in the direction of the tau lepton momentum. It means that the right-handed tau decay gives hard pion. You understand? Now, we consider lepton. It is more difficult because it decays into three particles. So, in the limit when the lepton energy is largest, you can tell that neutrino and anti-neutrino are emitted in this direction. Neutrino is left-handed, anti-neutrino is right-handed. We know that. So, lepton helicity should be left-handed, and it matches with this one. Okay. So, left-handed tau gives a hard L minus, hard lepton. Right-handed tau gives soft lepton because it's opposite. Okay, this is the rule. It's not so difficult for you to reproduce, and I cannot forget, because it's very simple. Now the difference is very clear. You know, Z decays into either tau lepton, left-handed tau pair, or right-handed tau pair. If it is left-handed tau pair, it is soft pi plus hard lepton. And if it is tau right, it is a combination of hard pi and soft lepton. Okay? Now, in case of Higgs boson, in any case, it is this and that, that is the combination. Okay? Because the distribution does not change by going to the antiparticle, by CP invariant. Okay? So, in this case, I just write this and that, okay, here. And this and that. Now, in case of Higgs boson, I should write this and that, and that and that. Then you find that in one case we have soft pion and soft lepton. In another case we have hard pion and hard lepton. Now, in all the experimental analysis, you need to put PT cup for leptons and pions. You know, because soft pion, soft lepton, we cannot use it in the analysis. Now, in case of Higgs boson, we have this combination where, you know, both pions and leptons are hard. And these events will have much higher acceptance compared to all the others. So if you do not consider the polarization correctly, you mistake the acceptance. So that is why it is very important to consider the polarization of tau lepton correctly. So please learn this and never forget about polarization. Now, another interesting thing is about WW star. Now, Higgs boson is spinless. When it decays in W pair, if W is left-handed, this is also left-handed. Exactly the same. If it is right-handed, another one is right-handed. Otherwise, you cannot have spin zero. Now, you know how left-handed W decays, because lepton is left-handed, anti-neutrino is right-handed. So lepton should be emitted along the W minus direction. Now consider W plus. It's opposite because L plus is right-handed, neutrino is left-handed. So in this decay, L plus is emitted opposite to the W plus direction. Okay. At the very end, what we find is lepton minus and lepton plus are emitted in the same direction. Neutrino and neutrino are emitted in the same direction. Because of this, missing PT adds up and lepton pair invariant mass is small. This is a signal of spin zero of the parent. And this is very clearly seen in this sphere, which I showed you before. This is transverse mass. So even though this is transverse mass, there is a peak is very strong. And this strong peak is because of this correlation. Okay. And if you forget about this correlation, if you just use some other resonance, then this will be broad. Actually, I found very nice transparency from Murtagat's work. Actually, I'm very happy to see this because they are at least trying to identify all decay modes of the tau leptons, okay, by studying those things. And they try to find a way to identify many decay modes of the pions. I do not know whether this will be successful, but if it is successful, it will give us lots of information. Now this is a difficult one, TT bar Higgs. So this is an extremely difficult experiment, but they say that this kind of signal can stand up on the background. Okay. Now, just by looking here, you already recognize that unless we believe in this green thing, nothing can be said from this figure. Okay. So the most important thing is that, to let everybody believe that this green distribution is correct. It's coming from the standard model. Okay. So now comes the rather serious transparency. Sorry. I think this part is very important. You know, the discovery of new physics at LHC needs either very exotic signals. I just wrote an extremely long reading particle which I explained to you some time ago, or try to find a way to make the background small, such that the signal of a background is much bigger. Okay. Now, and for the signal, we need high PT isolate photon emu missing PT, very large PT jet. And the important thing is the standard model background for this should be understood very well, especially for those complicated studies like two jets plus Higgs, or you know, PT bar Higgs is the extreme case. It's really complicated. Okay? We need to understand the standard model background for those events. And that is not at all easy, because we do not yet have the complete understanding of the standard model jet physics. Okay? So the important thing is we should prepare programs which calculate photon dw plus n jet with the correct normalization and correct distribution. Okay? And for those two vector bosons, TT bar plus n jet, okay? Those should be prepared. But now it is not ready yet, because it is a very difficult task. The important thing, the reason why it is difficult, you know, everybody knows that it is extremely easy to generate weak boson plus multi-jets, TT bar plus multi-jets, just by using Shower Monte Carlo. Okay? But this is completely wrong, because Shower Monte Carlo does not give correct correlation among jets. Correlations come from many, you know, dynamics, dynamical interference effects, especially from the spins and spin correlations. You know, quarks and gluons have spins, so it's very difficult. So actually, Shower Monte Carlo at this moment is completely useless for those things. So people are now making a new series of Monte Carlo programs which combines exact matrix elements and Shower Monte Carlo. Shower Monte Carlo is still you need it, because at the very end, all jets should be hadronized. Okay? So the idea is to, you know, first of all, the normalization of the events should be done by QCD perturbation theory, usually NX leading order by NL leading order corrections. And these are done for inclusive processes. Okay? So single vector boson, two vector boson, a TT bar, plus anything, we can calculate it. So the normalization will be done here. And this also has some ambiguity, but we can adjust it with experiments. More difficult thing is this inside of X, there are lots of jets. And those jets have some lots of correlations. And in order to have the correct correlation, we should evaluate those explicit multi-jet cross-section by using correct matrix elements. We cannot use leading log approximations. That's what Shower Monte Carlo does. So we need to use matrix elements to reproduce all the correlations, but at the same time, the sum over everything should come back to here, such that if the two jets are too near, then it should be merged and those things. Those are the things which Shower Monte Carlo can do it very well by using leading log approximation. So it is a combination of matrix element calculation and Shower Monte Carlo such that there will be no overlapping or double counting of events. And that's what everybody is doing. And the most successful one at this moment is called CKKW scheme, which is implemented in the program called SHARPA. And Michelangelo Mangano also have another idea, and he used it for ArcGen. So those kind of programs will be the only program which will be useful for this kind of analysis. And this prescription is relatively simple. So in a sense, we can use any kind of matrix element generator like MatGraph, which my group made. And also, just we combine it with a PTR or Helwig, the standard Shower Monte Carlo. We can always mimic those things relatively easily. And I think it is useful to have many experimental tools of this kind, because otherwise it would be very difficult to do anything. And here is my... This is what actually I gave to our experimental colleague. Strategy for understanding the standard background for new physics signals. And I started from 0.1 inverse 10 to 1, but you can start much earlier, okay, at the pilot, even at the pilot time. Those are the events which are important. High PT photon, W to L mu, Z to L bar, and PT bar, this, okay? And those are all inclusive. And this is a rough estimate of the cross-section. They may be different by a factor of 2, okay? But roughly speaking, we know at early stage how many of those events we have. Okay? Once we have this, then those distributions can be measured very accurately. Rapidity and PT are the only variables for when we consider photon, W, Z, PT bar as one quantity. Okay? So rapidity of PT bar, PT of PT bar is here. And then this quantity can be normalized to next leading order QCD corrections, and we roughly know the K factors and some modifications of PDS and the scale uncertainty. So those things are done at the inclusive level. This should be done first, and then there are so many events for each given region of rapidity and PT. Probably PT is most important. Rapidity probably you can just integrate, but depend on the physics. Then you will find one jet, two jet, three jet, four jet. And you compare these observations with this Monte Carlo, which has exact matrix elements built in. At this moment, you can also try to use the standard Helwig or standard Pythia, try to see if the correlation can be reproduced. I promise you that you can never even find a way to adjust it, because at the 2J or 3J level, the correlation is so complicated that it is never possible to adjust everything in the leading log. So we do need exact matrix element. Once you have exact matrix element, if the physics is completely the standard model, then we should expect that the correlation should be agree with the exact matrix element. The overall normalization of multi-jet events will be controlled by Shava Monte Carlo, by Sudakov factors. Those are the strategies which I think is most important. I think the time is 12:41. Let me see. Please let me finish my talk. Okay. Please let me use 3 more minutes. Because this is essentially the end of my handwriting part. After listening to my lectures, you roughly know what those things mean. Depending on the Higgs boson mass, this is a standard model case. For ATLAS 30 inverse 10 to 1, this is the significance. So signal over square root of signal plus noise. Okay? And if it is greater than 5, we can claim discovery. Okay? If it is greater than 3, it's kind of evidence. Okay? Now, at very low, around 120 GeV, this blue thing is look most promising. This blue thing is this one, vector boson fusion tau pair, okay? QQH, QQ to tau pair. So this seems to be the most promising. Two photon is here, okay? Now, if it is slightly heavier, this green thing, you know, if it is above 125 or so, this blue green thing is better. Green thing is, again, vector boson fusion, QQH, and H decays to WW star. That's very interesting. Okay. Now, ZZ star is also important. It's here. And here, this thing is inclusive H decaying to WW star. It's here. So those are the significance, and the important thing is if it is heavier than 180, actually heavier than 160 or so, it is very high. You know, this is 10 sigma, so it is something like 20 sigma. Okay, so it means that at very early stage, Higgs boson can be discovered. Because you know, five sigma will be passed much earlier. Okay. But many of those analyses are rather complicated. You know, even though statistics will be sufficient with, say, for some cases, even with you know, a few inverse center bands, but experimental analysis requires the understanding of all the backgrounds and their detector responses. For them, I think they will have lots of time. So probably it is not so easy to get to this stage at relatively early stage. I would naively think 3 years is necessary. The mass resolution is something like this. It's not bad. Higgs boson mass can be measured to here. Yeah? So once you have ZZ star, actually, the mass measurement can be as good as 1 mil. Even here, it is a few percent, right? So the mass can be measured rather well, even at the LHC. That's very interesting. And the width. Width is not easy, very difficult. Especially if the Higgs boson is lighter than 200 GeV, there seems to be no way to measure the Higgs boson width. I do not know. Someone will come up with a bright idea and they will measure it, okay? But usually you think that linear collider is needed for the light Higgs boson, especially two-photon collision. But once it is heavier than, you know, 300 GeV or so, the width can be measured rather accurately. 10% is fast when maybe 250 or 300 GeV. But those are the Higgs boson which nobody wants. And you know, some of the branching fractions, some of the branching fractions can be measured also at the LHC. You know, branching fraction error is here. So around here, it's 10% measurement of the branching fraction is possible. For H to gamma gamma, BB, WW, ZZ, yeah, those are the branching fractions. Now, Higgs boson mass of 120 is around here, okay? So it's not that. I mean, some of the branching fractions, even at the LHC, they can measure. This is essentially thanks to the spectra boson fusion contribution, where the cross section is proportional to the WW fusion. This is the last transparency which I gave to the students in Japan. Two-thirds of the students were part two theory students, so this is essentially for theory students. And the LHC will start, you know, 2 years from now, we'll hear the news from the LHC. And our view on particle physics will probably be, you know, completely renewed. And so I think I told them that you should better start preparing for the LHC era now. And what I would like them to do, or I'd like you to do, is to try to imagine what kind of new physics should be in the TEV region. And since the TEV region is where the electric symmetry is broken, consider what kind of physics you like. You think that the most attractive for you as a physics or which break the scale symmetry. And then for this scenario, what kind of signals we should expect at the LHC? You already know what kind of signals are needed to be triggered, okay, at the LHC. So look for such signals. And then once the signal is there, you think what kind of backgrounds we should expect from the standard model. And if the background is bigger than the signal, that's usually the case, then try to think if there is a way to beat the background. Okay? Yeah, it is something like try to look for some very particular kinematical configuration which is very special for the signal, which is absent in the standard model. And that kind of trick can be used to enhance the signal over noise. Okay? So those things you can consider. especially for the theorist, the number 5 is very important. Any theory of new physics, you should examine if there are hints or constraints on the new the model you are considering from other experimental or observations other than the LHC. You know, actually, this should always be done whenever you hear anything from the LHC. So it is a very good exercise for you to start this now. Okay? Once you hear any news from the LHC, you think that, or people may say that this is a signal of something. At that very moment, you go through this here. Okay? If this is a signal, then this kind of new physics should have some effect in other area which we already know, or perhaps it will be known soon, other than the LHC itself, right? Those are the things. Precision electric physics, STU and G-2, flavor changing neutral currents, KdV and leptonic flavor changing decays, CV violation, KB, EDN, variant number, non-conservation, and astrophysics and cosmology. And, you know, there should be many consequences for any new physics. You consider this, and if you find anything which is interesting, you propose. And if you don't find anything, you go up to step one. And this is what I recommend you to do. And in this way, you will enjoy LHC era. Thank you very much.
Okay, I guess you know you still have one more lecture, right? Do you want to take some questions now, or we just take a break? And okay, let's take a break for 10 minutes and then come back.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.